Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. And this week, my guest is Preston Beckman. Actually, this week and next week, because we sat down and had a nice hour-long chat, which I'm going to break up into two parts. Now, the name may sound familiar if you are a steady listener of this podcast, because I've had him on a couple of times before. Preston Beckman is a media consultant, and he's the chairman of the Beckman Group. And for 20 years, he was at NBC during the must-see TV era, also spent 15 years at Fox, and you may know him on Twitter as the Masked Scheduler. And we always bring him on the podcast to talk about the current state of the industry. And it's amazing because from year to year, it changes, and it changes significantly. And over the last few months, we have seen all kinds of sea changes, including the crash of Netflix, no comedies being purchased by CBS. It's been a bloodbath for TV comedies. And so I thought, well, let's get Preston Beckman back and let's talk about all of this. So over the course of the next two episodes, we are going to discuss the state of broadcast networks, that crash of Netflix, the future of streaming, TV dramas, the lack of comedy. We'll talk about commercials, programming, strategies, pilots, even sports on TV and on the streaming platforms. So a lot to get to. It's a fascinating discussion, and I've been in the industry an awful long time, and there were a couple of points that he brings up during the conversation that I didn't even know. So that's this week and next week, Preston Beckman, right here on Hollywood and Levine. Well, first of all, Preston, it must be nice to be able to sit on the sidelines and watch all of this stuff go by and not have to be in the middle of it, because, man, it seems like it's a mess these days.
It's a very different world from the one that I left even 5-6 years ago. Much more confusing, different ecosystem. The networks play a significantly different role in it, but I don't think they're done. They just have a different purpose today. And yes, I'm very happy not to be involved.
Well, it's interesting. I noticed that a lot of shows, especially from Fox, a lot of shows that were doing well in the ratings still were on the bubble because of license fees, and that the network was even willing to walk away from a hit show, which is their very rare commodities these days. They were able to say, okay, we'll play hardball because we just can't afford it. And this is something that's really new. And it seems like it's happening all the time now.
Well, when the Fox Disney deal happened and they separated the studio from the network, suddenly the dynamics changed. When I was at Fox and Fox Studio and the network were part of the same entity, it almost didn't matter if the broadcasting, if Fox Broadcasting made a profit off of shows like The Simpsons, like 24, because there are other ways that the corporation was profiting from those shows. So really, at that point, it just became a little bit of a dick wagging, to be honest, thing between the studio execs and the network execs, where it was the network, the studio execs would be basically saying, how much can we suck out of the broadcast networks? And to be honest, they didn't believe us when we told them how much money we were losing on shows like The Simpsons and Family Guy and 24, until they suddenly were running both the studio and the network. And then suddenly it was like, oh my God, look how much money they're losing on those shows. Like, we were lying to them. So once the Fox studio was removed from the broadcast network, I remember talking to friends over there, and I was saying, at some point, knowing the cast of characters over at Disney who came there from Fox, that at some point, how are you going to sustain these shows on your schedule? Because when you lose money now, you lose money, and somebody else who's making money off of these shows isn't part of your corporation anymore.
Right.
And that's kind of what's happening, which is they're acting, the Disney is acting in the same way that Fox Studio acted when FBC and the studio were under the same company. So it's rough.
So how does a network like Fox, that does not own a production arm, how do they exist compared to the other three networks?
That's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with Unscripted. I do believe they have a studio set up for Unscripted programming, like The Masked Singer.
And even that went down to the wire to get renewed.
Yeah, well, some of that's just it's different than the 911s and the Residents. You know, it was going to happen. So they're doing more and more of their more and more Unscripted. They have an animation studio, so they're doing more. They're going to do more animation, because at some point Disney is going to take The Simpsons and Family Guy away from them.
Right. So, I'm surprised they haven't already.
I know. And, you know, so, and I remember when Charlie Collier started, I had lunch with him, and I said, you know, you've got to create a studio. You've got to find somebody who's going to create programming, you know, scripted programming for you, because at some point, Disney's going to screw you over, and that's what's happening.
And boy, couldn't you see that from 50 miles away?
You know, we have a president who believes in bipartisanship. So, you know, these people are kind of naive sometimes. Now, I know Charlie's a bright guy. I mean, I think that they probably, I have to assume there was some agreement between Disney and Fox at the beginning about how they were going to supply FBC with programming and not make it completely impossible at the beginning.
Okay. Well, and I see a show like Call Me Cat got picked up for a third season.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, well, then what is the yardstick? Because that certainly is not a critical darling, and it certainly did not get great ratings. I'm sure in the past, Fox has canceled comedies that did well above Call Me Cat. So how does that happen?
Well, there's a couple of things. And I know we've talked on a few occasions, so I hope I'm not repeating myself with
no,
this.
No, that's okay. We have new listeners.
Okay. It's new to them. But you know, one of the things about the business is, and one of the reasons why I think, as much as people talk about all the choices that the viewer has, one of the reasons why I think the ratings continue to dwindle at the broadcast networks is because once you go beyond about 2 hours of new programming on your fall schedule or, you know, to start the season, you're generally in a position where you're going to lose audience rather than gain audience. You know, the philosophy among creative executives is we can do better. Well, they can't. So I actually quantified this. I was always big sort of rating cybermetrics person. And I had asked, when I was at NBC, I had asked our research department, how many hours of new programming can you put on before you start losing ratings by adding more? And there's a lot of reasons why. And it was 2.5. So
2.5 over a week
hours,
schedule?
2.5 hours. In other words, once you start adding your third hour of new programming to a fall schedule, the odds start increasing that your average rating is going to go down from the prior year.
Interesting. So,
yeah, and it's for a couple of reasons. One is, you know, executives aren't as good as they think they are. Let's just start there. But, you know, B, the more hours you put on, the more hours you're going to move on your schedule. You know, not only do you add 2 or 3 new hours, but you start moving around 2 or 3 shows to give those new programs better opportunities on your schedule.
Right.
You begin to, you have to spend more on marketing because you don't have as much pre-sold programming. And then at some point, you realize that you can't love all, as Don Ohlmeyer would say at NBC all the time, you can't love all your children equally. So a few of those new shows never get the benefit, the marketing money directed towards them because you just can't do that. So there's a lot of reasons why shows like, you know, Call Me Cat, and the one that I was shocked about was Welcome to Flatch.
yeah, that got picked up.
I know. Yeah. That gets into the Twilight Zone.
Uh-huh.
I kind of understand. Welcome to Flatch. I actually, this morning, I said to Dan Harrison, who's the head of scheduling at Fox, I said, Dan, if I were you, I would add zombies to the show next year and just make it about a zombie attack on Flash, because zombies always give you numbers. The point being is that the fewer hours you put on your schedule, the more you rely on IP as opposed to something completely new.
What is IP?
Intellectual property. So in other words, if you look at NBC's schedule, which I think for them is a pretty good schedule, you have a night of Chicago shows. Now, I know, Ken, I know you hate this, but I'm just talking as a
business
business person,
right,
and programmer.
Right. What's
and
going into their thinking.
Or watch them. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a night of Law and Order. You have a night of Chicago. You bring Quantum Leap back, pre-sold. You bring George Lopez back, pre-sold. You know, you have The Rock. So virtually their entire schedule, The Voice, their entire schedule is made up of pre-sold program. And that allows you sometimes to come up with a This Is Us. You know, maybe they didn't have it this year. I mean, last year they did, they had La Brea, which is sci-fi, and sci-fi generally will get you there to begin with. And clearly there was enough there to keep an audience. But then they had a show called, I think it was called Ordinary Joe or something, that was a headache. Just, I can only imagine the pitch for that. And that failed totally. But you can do that the more your schedule is made up of pre-sold, recognizable programming.
You know, I think La Brea would have been a lot better if it had been La Cienega. That's sidelines. That's a network note I would give.
I would have called it Sinkhole.
Yeah.
No, seriously. I would have just called it Sinkhole. That's what it was.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that probably saves you a couple of $1 million in marketing money. Sinkhole, oh, I get it. You know. When I was at NBC, our head of movies and miniseries, Lindy DeCoven, had an idea for a miniseries called Sinkhole. And I told her that if we were smart, we would premiere it on Cinco de Mayo.
Sinkhole de Mayo.
Exactly. And, and yeah, it was perfect marketing message, and people would know exactly when it was going to come on.
It's worth doing a show just for that.
Right, exactly.
Well, in terms of our dramas, especially, since Netflix, and we'll get into those platforms, but those shows look so well produced and so lavish that broadcast networks, I guess, sort of feel obligated now, because the audience is now accustomed to really well-mounted hour shows, and those are incredibly expensive. So you're kind of between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, and I don't think money necessarily translates into ratings. I think it's storytelling. And I think that's why and episodic storytelling more so than, serialized for the broadcast networks.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the things that really help. I mean, the more you do shows that are very easy to go down and like cops, lawyers, doctors, emergency people, that's what people want to see. There's enough of an audience left watching broadcast television who want to see those kinds of dramas. Science fiction is a little bit more of a crapshoot. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. But I don't think it's about money as much as it's about storytelling and feeling comfortable with a brand, which are some of the things that and CBS does very well. They know who they are. I think NBC is doing it. Fox, I think, was starting on the right path with the 911s. I don't see, if they get to the point where it's untenable to renew them, how hard is it to pick a city and say, here's a hospital, here's a police station, here's a fire department, now tell stories and cast it with interesting people? How hard is that?
I mean, interesting, good-looking people.
And interesting, but I'm not dismissing the creative, the importance of having the right people writing that stuff and everything. But how hard is it to say, this is the formula, let's do it, let's colonize, as I like to say, colonize these shows, put a colon in somewhere in the title, and build nights like that. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, well, they all seem to be doing it.
Strategically.
Okay, I want to go off on a tangent for just a minute and kind of then get back into this. And my tangent is this, and again, it's Fox. So they lose Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, go over to ESPN. And so there was some talk of, well, how important is the announcer? Because Al Michaels was available. And they could get Al Michaels, which would have cost a ton of money, or they could just go in-house and groom their number two guy, who's young, Burkhart, and very good, and they decided to go that route. So you think to yourself, well, how important is it to have a marquee announcer in one of those slots?
Unless they suit up and play the game, I don't believe it's that important. I'm not, and again, with all due respect to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Burkhart is, if you have like the NFL package, you see a lot of the second and third tier announcers. And there's that guy, Moose Johnson.
Johnson.
I think he's paired up with Burkhart. He's really good.
Oh, an analyst. Okay.
Yeah. I think an analyst is somewhat more important than a play-by-play guy. Burkhart will be fine. You won't notice a difference. I gather Brady has signed something with them, but
yeah, he's $365 million, which is more than he's made in his playing career, and he's never done it before, but it's Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, or if you had Peyton Manning in there, you saw what ESPN did this year. I think Color Guy is a bit more important, but I don't think any of it's, unless they're terrible, like you're seeing with the Apple TV baseball.
Oh my God.
Unless it, but I mean, you know, if you're Fox, you've groomed enough second and third tier people who can step up and go in there, and it then comes down to the games, you know?
Right.
So as I said, unless they're suiting up, I always kind of chuck. And look, I give them credit. If they can make that kind of money, fine. But Kevin Burkhardt would be fine. I mean, as a Mets fan, I saw him evolve as the field announcer on the team for several years. And he's very qualified and has been doing a great job with baseball for them.
Yeah. But sure. I agree with you. I don't think anybody tunes in to a football game to hear a particular announcer. I mean, I always love when I tune in a game and there's Al Michaels, and I'm a big Joe Buck fan, and Jim Nance is really good too. But you're right. If it's a game I want to see and it's Mike Tirico or Kevin Burkhardt or Ian Eagle, it's like, fine.
Right.
You know?
If the game is good, you're going to sit there and watch it. If it's bad, nobody's going to make it better by announcing it. Having said all that, the New York Mets have the best television.
They do. Gary Cohen, who is with me in the minor leagues.
Yeah, Keith Hernandez.
Yeah.
I mean, when they're going well, which they are right now, and you have those three guys calling the game, it's baseball heaven. It's just the best.
It truly is.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's get back to my field or former field in television, comedy. You talked about CBS and the CBS brand, and one of the CBS brands was comedy. Well, they axed a bunch of comedies and they didn't pick up any new comedies. And what was interesting to me, taking a step back, they had very few pilots, and now they call them presentations, which is a cheap way of saying, well, we'll give you a few minutes. And so I'm wondering, well, were there very few pilots because they're not as interested in comedy? Number two, did they not pick up any of these shows because they just weren't that good? If they were good, they would have put them on. And three, of course, if you have 10 pilots, the chances of getting two or three good ones to put on the air are a whole lot better than if you have three pilots.
Well, I mean, I can't speak for them and what their strategy was. I mean, I do think that they did come up with for whatever it means today, a hit in Ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
which should be that, encouraging to them.
Yeah. But, and again, I don't know what the process is anymore, given, especially given the past 2 years with COVID. But, you know, it is possible, and I'm not saying this is the case, it is possible if they said, let's call a timeout here and think about what worked with Ghosts. And I had heard or read that there might be doing a spinoff or a companion show to Ghosts. Again, the notion that the best leader
Goblins?
The best lead into a show is itself. You know, it's possible. They said, look, they're smart over there. And, you know, one of the things when I was in the business, I would always do is when I saw something working on another network, I would always ask our research department to do some focus groups on those shows as opposed to our shows and just say, you know, what is it about the show that is working? And it's usually not the obvious. It's usually not, well, there are a bunch of ghosts in a house. There's something else, as you know. You know, you got to really dig down to the next level and go, you know, I can do this again, but it doesn't have to be with ghosts. And maybe that's one of the things they did is they started digging a little deeper. And they said, you know, maybe we have to rethink our comedy direction a little bit. Maybe we're going in the wrong places to find success. I remember when Lost came about, everybody thought it was about science fiction. You know, oh, that's why it worked. It was about science fiction, and we did some research, and we had a show at Fox called Prison Break, which didn't look anything like Lost. Mm-hmm. But the deeper we dug into why Lost worked, the more we realized that Prison Break was what had the same elements of success that Lost had, as opposed to the science fiction shows that the other broadcast networks put on the air because they thought they figured out why Lost worked. So it's possible that CBS is going, hey, you know, maybe we have to just take a beat and rethink some of what we were doing. It's also possible the comedy pilots weren't that great.
Right, right.
You know, you've got Chuck Lorre, who's over at Warner Brothers, right?
He's not right, part of right. TV. And he had two of his shows canceled.
Yes, exactly. So maybe as opposed to Fox, which might have been a little more naive, maybe the people at CBS said, you know what? We see where this is going.
Right. I mean, to be honest with you, I was surprised that both of those shows, Be Positive and The United States of Al, I was surprised that both of those got picked up last year.
Well,
because both of those were bad then.
Maybe. Again, I honestly watched a few minutes of them, but it's Chuck Lorre. But maybe now they're going, well, you know, it's Chuck Lorre, but I mean, look, Dick Wolf, yeah, he's over at CBS with the FBIs, but all his other shows are in his home company. And, you know, at some point, NBC might go, you know, we want those FBI shows for a third night of IP programming. So maybe CBS said, you know, maybe we're better off not relying on Chuck Lorre and Warner Brothers as much as we've been.
Right. Especially since they'd much rather have it in-house. They'd much rather have comedies from their studio.
Exactly.
Well, you know, it could also be, if you look at focus groups, they find that, well, people find Ghosts funny. Okay? It's a comedy and it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we should do some sitcoms that are funny. What about that?
You're 100% right. I remember at NBC, I'm so bad with names now. We did a sitcom pilot with the guy who he's been in The Good Wife, Alan Cummings.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was him, and it was actually the guy from King of Queens.
Kevin James?
Kevin James, yeah. And they were brothers. They didn't realize they were brothers. And he comes over from England, and it was hilarious. And we watched it with a lot of people in the room, and everybody was laughing. So afterwards, I would leave the room, and we would talk about things. And I asked how many people would pick it up, and virtually nobody raised their hand. And I said, well, how many people thought it was funny? And everybody raised their hand. And I said, I don't understand this. This is the funniest pilot we saw, and you don't want to pick it up.
What was their reason?
I think it was a British one. Some of it was a British lead. Also, to be perfectly honest, everybody has agendas, you know. So you're sitting there with comedy development people that have promised some of their friends, "Oh, we're going to get your shows on the air," and here this thing comes along that maybe didn't have the same number of champions, but it's you're sitting in a room with people other than the comedy development people who are laughing. But they'll talk it down. I'm being honest.
But in a sense, aren't they shooting themselves in the foot by doing that?
They don't believe. A lot of times, you know,
they don't care. I guess.
Yeah, developments that don't believe in something, which I've never understood. Also, which is, well, if you didn't believe in it, why did you want fight to make it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen that happen.
Exactly.
Where it's like, well, we just don't think there's an episode two here. Okay, well, why did we make it then? Why didn't you just kill it before?
Right. You just discovered that Thursday?
Yeah. I mean, it's a strange business. I don't have to tell you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the shows that NBC picked up, and they only picked up two comedies. One was a George Lopez show, and I go, how many times has that guy been to bat? How many times have we seen that tired act? and the other is a reboot of Night Court. I enjoyed Night Court quite a bit when it was on, but I'm thinking to myself, okay, anybody who was a fan of Night Court is not in the target demo that NBC hopes to snare. And anyone who is, Night Court means nothing. You know, and having John LaRoquette back to reprise his character means nothing. So why? Why pick that up?
Oh, God. I wish I could tell you I knew. I've seen those situations before. Sometimes it's the fear of not doing it and having someone else do it because it seems so obvious. Again, the idea of it's a known entity. You've got a person from the first iteration of this back, even though, as you say, nobody cares.
Mm-hmm. And I love John LaRoquette, and he's very funny in the show. Will enjoy it considerably.
That was a show that worked because of the cast, mm-hmm. the whole cast. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to work just by having John. And first of all, if he's still in his role, wasn't he like a public mm-hmm. defender? No.
Yeah, I think he's in a different role.
Oh,
somehow.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
God, so many people from the original show have died.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Yeah. My son was actually born the night Marky Post gave birth on the original. We were watching
to your son.
No.
Okay.
We were watching it while my wife was in labor.
Okay, just checking.
No, but it was again, it's IP. I keep coming back to that. It's the less work you have to do nowadays, the easier it is. And you know, we've seen that so many times in recent years with picking up the Wonder Years was picked up again. You know, Roseanne was big. I mean, we just, and I'm not even criticizing it. I mean, I understand that it makes it easier to put a schedule together with pre-sold network broadcast schedule together with pre-sold programming. But, you know, honestly, you're seeing it with the streamers also, one day at a time.
Yeah. Fuller House.
Yeah, exactly. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of the business, which is, you know, how can I save on marketing? How can I hope that there's an audience left or that there are parents who will tell their children about a show and say, oh, when I was a kid, I watched this and, you know, and then you put some of the stars from the first iteration back in it as something else. And you said, maybe you get two generations to watch it. It's just, it's part of the tools of the business.
Okay, there's part one of my two-part interview with Preston Beckman. We continue next week talking a lot more about comedy, also about the various platforms, streaming services, sports on TV. Is the Super Bowl someday going to be a pay-per-view event? Well, we have a lot to talk about next week. Hope you will come back and join us. So, as always, our thanks to Adam and Susie Meister, Butler, Howard Hoffman, John Wolford, Bruce, and Jason Miller. Want to share something with me? Well, my email address is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Also on Twitter, @KenLevine. And Preston Beckman is also on Twitter as The Masked Scheduler. And you can follow me on Instagram. Please do, because I like to post some of my cartoons on there from time to time. Okay, part two next week with Preston Beckman right here on
Hollywood and Levine.